The Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by these great sponsors. Are you looking to value your equipment more accurately, target the right buyers and close more deals, reach your ideal customer? Then look no further. Fusible isn't just about ag data, it's about action. Our best-in-class solution empowers you to value your equipment accurately, make informed decisions, and find the perfect prospects. Ignite your dealership's growth at fusible.com/movingiron-podcast. Out in the field, every decision counts. You wouldn't plant without testing your soil, so why would you prospect blind? Introducing EDA, your one-stop shop for ag equipment intel. EDA goes beyond specs and prices. You get deep dive data on every piece of equipment, like UCC filings that help track ownership changes and uncover potential sales leads, D&B firmographics, which help you understand the financial health and buying power of potential customers, market trends that help you stay ahead of the curve, and insights on equipment demands and pricings. With EDA, you're not just looking at data, you're seeing opportunity. You find the right buyer, sell smarter, and build lasting relationships. Visit edadata.com for your free demo and unlock the power of knowledge. For over 80 years, Iron Solutions has been your go-to data source for ag dealers, lenders, and manufacturers. Get powerful appraisal and value forecasting tools that fuel profitable decisions anytime, anywhere. Get your free demo at ironsolutions.com. Iron Solutions, confidence in every click. Today, there are many ways to finance ag equipment, but nobody delivers simple, fast, or flexible financing like AgDirect. Learn more about your options to buy, lease, and refinance equipment at agdirect.com. Valley Transportation has been hauling ag and construction equipment across the country for the past 33 years. Call Parker at 800-657-4910 for all your trucking needs. At Valley Transportation, our goal is to help you reach yours.
When you partner with Axon, you immediately gain access to a full range of products and solutions designed to meet the complex needs of today's grower. We carry all major brands and sizes of tires and wheels. We specialize in large diameter wheels for large equipment. We have one of the largest OEM replacement wheel inventories in North America. Known for extreme flotation setups, duals, and triples, we have wheels for all makes and models of tractors, sprayers, combines, and grain carts. If we don't have the wheel in stock, we'll custom build, sandblast, and paint in-house. There isn't a more vast inventory in North America dedicated to helping dealers move more iron. With facilities on the West Coast and in the heart of the Midwest, leverage our 230,000 square feet of indoor inventory to solve any problem a grower may have. Move more iron with Axon.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. You'll find us here, Moving Iron.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast. I have got Greg Roberg here back from Ag Direct to talk about what's going on in the world of, yes, ag lending, I guess is the best way to do that. So, Greg, how you doing, man?
I'm good. Casey, good to see you. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. Things are plugging along here. well. We got some snow this morning, so you know, what more could you ask for, right?
Yeah, old man winter is not letting go of his grip just yet, is he?
No, it's second winter out here, you know, in the Western Panhandle. We've got we still got April and May to go yet before winter's done. So get this bereavement somewhere in the middle where it feels like spring and everyone gets tricked, and then you have a blizzard or two yet to go. So we'll be good. We'll be plugging along there. So.
Probably could use the moisture.
We definitely could use the moisture. No doubt about there. No doubt about that. All right, Greg, let's talk a little bit about what's going on here. So. Starting to see some abbreviation a little bit on some interest rates. I went out to your website and looked around, and there's some stuff out there for that stuff over $200,000 where you're looking at some 6.85% interest rates. You know, this time last year, a lot of guys are signing notes at 7.5% or 8% interest rates. So there is some opportunity there where you're starting to see some breaks in the interest rates, to where if you're thinking about doing something, this might be a good time to do that.
Yeah, totally agree with that, Casey. Yeah, we've seen some relief anywhere from, you know, 0.5%, maybe upwards of 75 basis points, 0.75%. So it feels a lot better to have rates in the sixes.
Yeah.
And especially on bigger equipment, you can get rates in the sixes, you know, 6.85 that's our best rate. You know, it's a larger deal. The salesman gives us a call, and sometimes we can sharpen the pencil and get a little bit lower than that. But also, by and large, the market is saying, you know, really good rates somewhere between 6.5 and 6.9.
Yep.
And kind of depending on who the lender is.
Yep.
So that feels good. Gives us, I think, all a little bit of optimism that maybe we've hit the peak.
Yep.
Now we're kind of coming down a little bit. Everybody wants to get back in those fives. It wasn't more than probably what a couple years ago, 2.5 years ago, it was 3.5%.
Yeah.
I don't know if we'll see that anytime soon. I would say probably not. You know, I think fives are in our future again. I don't know if that's in 24, if we'll have to wait till 25. Fed meets again here coming up in March. They meet 8 times a year. Right now, there's about a 90% chance of kind of the experts that look at that that say Fed's just going to hold steady.
Yeah.
And everything you read is pretty much you're going to hold steady. So they look at jobs report, they look at inflation, they just kind of get a gauge of how the economy is doing.
Yeah.
So as we kind of look into our crystal ball and using some of the experts, it looks like possibly in June would be the most likely cut. And personally, I would call it 50-50 if that happens or not. Typically, the Fed doesn't do a lot in an election year. And I think Chairman Powell is going to be very cautious in cutting rates until he feels really good that inflation's at 2%. Which he said is his target or near 2%. So I guess my personal opinion would be is that's a 50-50, but I feel a lot more confident going into the fourth quarter that we could see some interest rate relief. How much? You know, maybe a quarter, a couple times. So hopefully by Christmas we could be down another 0.5%. So it could be maybe in those low sixes. So that's my best guess today. I did want to mention, though, we've seen a pop or an increase in leasing.
Yeah, that was my next question. Was the leasing, talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so we're having a good year so far, and I direct, I know we're early into it as we record this year in early March or mid-March. Appreciate everybody's support, farmers and dealers taking advantage of Ag Direct, whether it be a loan product or a lease product. But our leasing's up over 37%, actually, for January and February compared to a year ago.
Wow.
And I think, you know, we kind of anticipated that just because prices of equipment doesn't come down. And, you know, there's still strong demand for new as well as late model good used equipment. And I think a lot of folks are kind of looking at what commodity prices are doing. They want to upgrade equipment. They're really looking at cash flow.
Yeah.
What kind of payment can I afford? And Ag Direct's most popular lease is what we call lease to own. And so it could be a pro or a put. That's kind of a fancy acronym, but basically it's a lease to own. You lease it. You can trade it if you want. You can buy out the residual when the time comes. You have all kinds of different options. And so we've really seen an increase there. Probably as far as an asset, I'd say it's mostly on tractors.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like tractors are still moving around. There's a lot of tractors to pick from. There's plenty of real top tractors out there to go find what you're looking for. But as we start kind of looking at this, you know, we're in those typical peak selling cycles right now. So we got that ahead of spring harvest and spring planting, those kind of things where people are making decisions about what it is they're going to be doing as they move forward in the year. And you know, we're in that phase right now, especially start looking at stuff like sprayers and those kind of things. Those are the kind of the first to go. And we've got some people making some decisions on planters and those kind of things as used planters and those kind of things as we head into planting season. I guess one question I'll ask you, Greg, and then we'll wrap it up here. But as you're looking at your portfolio, are you seeing more people come to you with more frequency when it comes to saying, hey, you know, I'm starting to look at some of these upgrade kits that are out there, whether it's on the deer side or the precision side, sprayer planter upgrades and stuff like that. Are you seeing some of that kind of peak a little bit where you're seeing more of that traffic come your way?
A little bit. I would say it's significant, but yeah, it certainly gets a little bit more year over year, especially if you have an older toolbar. I mean, you can outfit a planter. Toolbar might be 20 years old. You know this case as well as anybody. You can make that planter almost as functional as a new planter with all the different technologies. So we do that at Ag Direct. We like to get the whole asset. We will do technology, but it's usually like a 3-year loan, and sometimes those payments are a little bit more than what folks want. So if we can get the toolbar or the main asset, Then we could go up to 5 years or maybe even beyond that. So it makes those payments a little bit more manageable. So certainly seen an uptick, especially when you look at 10 years back. Yeah. It's really increased a lot, but it just seems to be a little bit more incrementally year after year. But as folks look at cash flow, that might be an option that they look at. Instead of trading for something newer, they maybe just modify or upgrade what they have. But you know, now's a great time. You talk about inventory levels, you know, yeah. I would say most dealers would say we're caught up, you know, manufacturers are caught up and we may even have a few different types of extra combines or extra tractors that need to find a new home. So that's really changed pretty quickly just in the last 12 months from maybe not having all the inventory that the dealer wanted to having pretty much everything that they want ready to sell. So if you're looking to buy equipment, I would say now's a really good time to upgrade because your dealer should have quite a bit of selection. And if they don't have what they have, if they don't have what you want, I bet they could find it.
Yeah. If they don't have what you want, you got to start asking some questions because there should be plenty of everything going around for everybody. So, real quick, Greg, as you look out across the spectrum now, you just talked about how great 24 started for Ag Direct. As you're looking on, do you see any stumbling blocks ahead of you guys that you were kind of worried about a little bit?
Yeah, certainly the corn and bean prices. Yeah, that's absolutely. a big concern of ours because our success is tied directly to dealers and farmers' success. And so we're seeing a lot of corn prices, cash corn that starts with a 3. That doesn't make anybody feel real good, I guess, unless maybe you're a protein producer and you're buying corn. That probably helps you with your profit margins. But if you're producing corn and beans, you'd much rather see that start with a 5. So that's likely the biggest headwind out there right now, biggest concern for all of us that are in this industry. So we'll have to see how that plays out. So far, I think there's just a lot of cash in the market and for some really profitable years in farming. So folks that want to upgrade or maybe they ordered something and it's in, something new that's in, it seems like the pace of equipment, at least through the first couple months from what our vantage point and already start March, is very similar to what 23 was. So, you know, we kind of, at mid-market right now, case you to be kind of that August, September timeframe. You know, do we get rain where we need it? Do we get any kind of bump in commodity prices to make us all feel a little bit better come August? So we're going to continue to do our best to win business here in March and April. Those are big months for anybody that's financing or leasing equipment. And then kind of see what the summer and early fall bring.
Right on, Greg. Well, it's always good to have you on, man. If folks want to reach out to you, get more information about what you're doing over to Ag Direct, what's the best way to do that?
Couple of best ways you can go to us at agdirect.com. You can see our rates. You can apply through agdirect.info if you are looking at buying something. Even if you're buying at a dealer and you want to just get approved ahead of time, go ahead and do that. We can always work with whatever dealer you choose. So that's agdirect.com. We'd love to hear from you. Call us at, we're here to help.
Right on. Greg, appreciate you being on. We'll catch you again next time.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Casey.
Hello, and welcome to Moving On Podcast. I've got Tanner Emke back from CoBank, and he's here to talk about what's going on in the world of ag economics. Tanner, how you doing, bud?
I am wonderful, Casey. Thanks for having me back again.
It's always a pleasure, sir. Not much to talk about. I don't know what we're going to cover today. There's not much going on in the world of ag right now. But
there's plenty going on.
There's more stuff going on than I've ever seen happen, you know, this early into a planting season where the weather and where we're at right now and the amount of warm weather and the amount of stuff coming out of dormancy this early in the year is really setting the stage where if there were to have a cold snap come through one night where it got down to, you know, into the 20s in wheat country, we could have a serious problem. What we're seeing there. So I guess, you know, as you're looking around, Tanner, what are some of the pressures that you're seeing right now in the marketplace as we start looking at, you know, how the funds are record short? We've got, obviously the geopolitical stuff going on around the world. We've got situations that we see with overall on-farm income for 24. So I guess you tell me where you want to start at, and we'll go down the rabbit hole.
Well, you covered a lot on your other episodes, but we'll just touch on grain prices right now. Okay. That's an obvious problem. Because we've got no shortage of supply as it is right now. Corn stocks as of December 1st are still at multi-year highs. We're going to have stocks here reported at the end of March. We'll have an update on that. But, you know, that's really the main driver here. and you've got big stocks here in the U.S., big crop coming down in South America. I think we've probably overplayed the story on Brazil's drought. We've underplayed the story of what's going on in Argentina. And Argentina's crop is rebounding. It's going to be double what it was last year. And Brazil is going to have a smaller crop. But when you add that together, that's still a lot of corn. So probably going to be a record-sized crop in addition to the record crop that we had here. So the fundamentals just aren't there, Casey, to turn the story around on prices. And corn is going to be the driver. Corn is king. Right? Mm-hmm. It's a big reason why we're down where we're at on wheat prices. You know, we had a smaller world wheat crop this past year. But remember, we had big carry-in stocks from last year, especially over in the Black Sea region with Russia having a record crop prior year and then another big crop this year. And then you've got cheap corn competing with wheat into the feed channel. And then on top of all this, you got a strong dollar. There's nothing bullish about anything going on right now.
Right.
So as to the funds, what's going on there? Why are they so short? They're record short in some cases. The funds are laying on some very heavy short positions. Why? Because short positions right now make money. Owning a commodity, owning a grain is going to be a very painful experience when you are in surplus with a strong dollar. So there's just not any case here for the funds to try to challenge this story. So what are they going to do? They're going to follow the trend. And that's what funds do. We got to remember the funds and their strategy. The funds are trend followers. And so they've been laying on some very heavy short positions. We've been following this in CoBank because our concern is what happens when the funds unwind these heavy short positions. Well, you could get a repeat of what you see perhaps in something like Tesla. If you remember, like it's been a couple of years ago when the Tesla stock was on fire. It's because all these short holders had to get out of their positions. They were losing way too much money and they were willing to pay any price on stock to get out of their shorts. And so now people are wondering, well, are we going to be in the same position with grains where if the funds have to unwind all these short positions, are we going to see a sharp rally in grains? And that would be of consequence to our co-op customers because they are going to own long, they're going to be long the physical commodity short the futures. And so they'd have to pay margin calls all the way up, which can be a very painful experience. We have a lot of bad memories of what happened when Russia invaded Ukraine. Commodity prices rose quite sharply. Wheat went from $7 to $14 in short order. And so the funds had to carry or had to pay margin calls all the way up. Okay. And so now people are wondering, are we going to see a repeat of that when you have the funds so heavily short? Right now, we just don't see it. Like I said, we've got a lot of commodity here in the U.S. and around the world, especially in South America, especially over in Russia. We have a strong dollar. The weather right now over in Russia for their crop is quite good. Their crop is in good shape. Here in the U.S., we've got an improved situation on the plains where the crop doesn't, where the wheat crop doesn't look nearly as bad. I will say, however, we've got a concerning situation in the Midwest as we head into planting season. It's a little dry, especially in parts of northeast Iowa and the surrounding areas. But we're still a long ways yet till we put a seed in the ground in the Midwest, and it's not really a dire situation. So as it is right now, there's no real reason to be very concerned and no real reason for the market to be laying in a lot of risk premium. Okay, because again, the supply and demand fundamentals just don't paint any bullish story whatsoever, and it's a very low risk situation as it is right now on supply. What about demand? Demand is growing, especially for soybeans, when you have all this expanded crush capacity to meet the needs of renewable diesel. Clearly, there's a bullish story there, right? Well, there again, we still have a strong dollar. We're still competing against a record crop down in South America. It's really hard to find the bullish case there, even though we have a very strong demand story that continues to grow here in the United States. So however you want to look at it right now, Casey, the fundamentals just aren't there that I see at any rate for corn, wheat, and soybean prices to turn around. But of course, we're always just one missile launch attack away from some geopolitical event around the world to cause markets or to cause the funds to exit those short positions and go to cash or go to treasuries as a safe haven. And doing that or exiting those positions would probably cause a pretty sharp. So anyway, I'll let you figure out how what's going to happen in the future with those situations. But anyway, supply-demand fundamentals just aren't there. And until we see a concerning situation unfold with weather or a concerning situation unfold geopolitically, we're probably going to be down here on prices.
Right on. Okay. All right. So this time of year when the prospective planting report comes out, people kind of fill a survey out and kind of say, hey, this is what we're going to plant and this is what we're not going to plant type of things. Looking at what's going on, I mean, last year we planted 94 million acres of corn. What's your thoughts on what's that mix might look like? What might be some winners? What might be some losers in acres when you start looking at where prices are and then, you know, going into planting season?
Yeah, great question. Obviously, with corn prices flirting with a three handle, that's going to take the wind out of corn acreage. And USDA has put their number at 91 million. I'm not so certain about that. It could be up around 91 to 92. Still down from last year's acreage by a fair amount. But I don't know. There's a lot of momentum behind corn. I think sometimes people get a little overly optimistic or pessimistic. I think corn is one of those crops that tends to hold its acres fairly well just because farmers like to grow it. And there's always a market for it. Fertilizer prices are down from last year, and corn is the big user of fertilizer. So I think that might perhaps soften the margins a little bit, make the margins less painful for planting corn. And then I think we've got a little optimistic on soybeans because obviously we talked about renewable diesel, but we've still got a lot of imports coming into the U.S. replacing soybean oil. We've got a lot of canola oil coming in from Canada. We've got palm oil coming in from Southeast Asia. We've got tallow coming in from other areas. All of that is flowing into renewable diesel and competing with soybean oil. And so that kind of takes away that thesis that we've got to have a lot of soybean acres in this country. We haven't really taken into account those record large imports. And then same thing for exports. Strong dollar, record crop down in South America, weakening demand over in China because their economic situation and their hog feeding margins are not looking good. Their crush margins, soybean crush margins in China have been negative. So there's a thesis there that's hard to make about demand. You know, it's going to be weaker demand for U.S. soybeans overseas. And at the same time, we've got all these record imports coming into the U.S., competing with soybean oil as feedstock for renewable diesel. So I think that kind of takes the wind out of the sails a little bit for soybeans. So USDA is putting their number at soybeans at 87.5. Yeah, more probably around 86.5 to 87 on acres for soybeans, me personally. I'm still counting on an expansion of acreage. I just don't see it as bullish as USDA does. And then wheat is probably going to lose a little bit. And, I think those acres are probably going to go to some other alternative crops. Wheat might pick up or lose some acres to soybeans and corn. But wheat right now is a real dog. It's a real tough story to plant wheat right now. And so I think spring wheat acres are probably going to lose out. And then at the same time, we may see more graze out of winter wheat because cattle prices are high. Wheat prices are in the tank. The economics of running a combine over a winter wheat crop right now just aren't looking good. And so I think you'd probably see some increased graze out with livestock into the spring. And so that's going to reduce harvested acres on winter wheat. Then I think cotton's probably going to pick up a little bit more too. Cotton prices have really come up here recently. And I think that's going to pull acres, and that'll probably pull some acres out of corn. So, you know, I think, I don't know how much that would be, half a million up to a million, something like that. So at any rate, when you add all that together, I think the markets are still trying to, the markets will continue to be in competition for acres. I think the USDA is going to find out those numbers are going to shift around a little bit between now and prospective plantings.
It's going to be interesting to watch how that plays out because, you know, this is, as you look out into 24 and kind of economically thinking, speaking and all those things, where on-farm income is staged to be based on where commodity prices are and you look at futures and those kind of things, where those are going to be at. We have seen a big pullback on input costs as far as what they were comparatively, what they've been in the last couple of years. So there's a little bit of a silver lining there, but I guess as you look at your crystal ball here out in the 24, What's your thoughts about how 24 is going to play out going into 25?
Well, we're going to need to see a turnaround in commodity prices. And right now, there's just no story for that. And as long as we're going to be down here and with production costs still fairly resilient, like we just mentioned, fertilizer prices come back a little bit compared to last year. And fuel prices as well. And that's been a big benefit. But land prices still high.
Right.
Cash rents still high. Machinery prices, you know about that. Yeah. There may be some softening going on there. But it's, you know, the cost of production story is always slow to catch up with what happens to commodity prices. And so what's going to happen is you're going to see a big erosion of net farm income. USDA is projecting a 25% drop from last year. That's not going to be until 2025, until I think your major inputs like land and machinery and labor and things like that finally kind of come into alignment. So it's going to be a couple of years probably of some real compressed margins. And you know, you'll start to see it first probably in cash rents, where cash rents start to be negotiated and or renegotiated rather. And farmers go to their landlords and say, look, these numbers just aren't penciling. Maybe you can get a better deal from somebody else, but I highly doubt it. Can we renegotiate this rent down to something that's a little bit more workable? And so that'll probably be a conversation that if that doesn't happen this year, it's definitely going to happen next year. That is a conversation that's going to happen next year where cash rents start coming down and then land rents are probably going to follow behind, because that's kind of it's easier to renegotiate a cash rent than it is to try to renegotiate the bid on the land, right? Once it's bought, it's bought. And you've got a lot of carryover income from last year that's supporting land values. So it's going to be the cash rents that are going to be the leading indicator there, I think. So heading into next year, keep an eye on cash rents and land values. Probably going to plateau this year and start to drop would be my idea. But you know, like I said, it takes a little bit for these costs to finally catch up to commodity markets. Well, I think we'll start to see those things really turn next year.
Let's look at interest rates. Talk about that a little bit as you look at that. The Fed said they were going to lower. Well, they didn't really say that. They hinted that they were going to lower interest rates 3 times.
Yes.
Everyone's kind of thinking that maybe this June, July timeframe will be when they do that. I guess as you're looking at that, say we do drop the interest rates 0.75 point to one. Do you think they'll do? I guess.
Yeah.
I guess the question I'm asking is, do you feel like the Fed is in a place where they're going to start lowering rates, or do you feel like the Fed is in a place where they're just going to kind of wait and see what happens with what they're doing? Because, I mean, for as high as interest rates are compared to what they were, I mean, it hasn't really hurt the economy like they thought it was going to.
Yeah, Jay Powell's latest comments are they're still in it. They've still, they're waiting for inflation to come down. They haven't committed to doing it. To cutting rates at a certain period of time. And when you look at the hirings out there, the job hirings and job openings, those are still growing. Inflation is not down to their desired level of 2%. They're still above 3%. And you still have an economy that just doesn't give up right now. And so, it's hard to see the Fed committing to cutting rates at a certain point in time when you still have the data points coming in saying inflation is still alive. It's weakened, it's down, but it's still above their desired level. And the latest numbers coming in from their surveys of the economy are indicating that perhaps there's no rate cut in June. Perhaps it'll be in the latter half of the year. It might not be 3, it might be 2, it might be 1. The Fed does not want to back themselves into a corner and say, yes, we're going to do this when the data may indicate that perhaps that may be a little premature. So my personal bias, Casey, is it's not going to happen until the back half of the year. I think given where we're at right now, and this is only March, we've still got some months to go before we get to June.
Right.
My thinking is that they're still afraid of a repeat what happened in the 19th. And what happened then is the Fed cut rates too soon and inflation took off again. And then they had to get Paul Volcker into the Fed to finally whip it. And those are some very painful times. So my feeling is they're probably going to be a little bit slower than what they had telegraphed back in December. They said 3 rate cuts in 2020. Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to hold their fire
on that.
Yeah, I don't see 3 rate cuts in 24. Not with the way the economy has been reacting.
Yeah, it's still too strong.
still stronger than what it's stronger than what it should be. I mean, for where it's at. So, I mean, if you listen to the Talking Heads, you know, so it's that's definitely going to be something to pay attention to. And at the end, that's a game changer. Again, kind of going back to, going back to what you talked about, you know, earlier with the price of commodities, and then you throw interest rates on top of that coming down a little bit, that changes the spectrum of things. Well, but in a lot of cases, I mean, they've already set up most operations now have got their funding for the year. So they're whatever interest rate they're at now is what they're going to be at till 25. So they really wouldn't see anything transpire till 25 anyway. So,
on their operating loans.
Yeah.
Then there's the issue of the dollar.
Right. And that was the next question. Start talking about the dollar. We saw kind of have a little, take a little nick there. Went lower earlier this week, but really the dollar's been pretty strong comparatively to where it's been at.
So. Yeah, historically, it's still fairly strong. And that's what you would expect of an economy that still continues to grow with a monetary policy or fiscal policy that is still fairly tight. And so it's come down here over the last few days. But in the long-term trend, when you go back to like early 2020, back, you know, at that point or late 2020, well down or well below that period. But historically speaking, when you go back over the last say 10 years, the dollar is still fairly strong. And so I still consider it a strong dollar, even though it's still showing some signs of weakening. It's still historically fairly strong. And that's going to be a headwind to our exports. And, you know, if the Fed were to start cutting interest rates, you know, that might weaken the value of the dollar. But it remains to be seen if that were to happen. And so I think we're just going to have to go with the story that as long as the U.S. economy is growing, we're going to have a strong dollar, and that's going to be a headwind to our exports, and that tends to be very bearish on commodities.
Yep. So now that was the next thing I was going to bring, exports. If you look at what China's been doing here of late, they've been coming to the table and they bought some stuff, but they've also canceled a lot of stuff too. So yes. I guess as you're looking at our export situation, currently where we're at right now, I guess, do you see any real glimmers of hope out there that are jumping out at you?
Yeah, it's hard to find that. I mean, right now you've got the Chinese government is trying to replenish its state reserves, and so they're buying a lot of grains. So they're buying a lot of sorghum. They're buying some corn. The cancellations on the wheat purchases surprised me. There's been three of them now in the last week or so. Three big cancellations on soft wheat they made. And so that was interesting. I'm assuming that they're switching those purchases over to probably Russia. Russian exports are still very competitive on price. And so I would imagine that's what they're doing, is they're canceling those purchases of U.S. soft wheat and moving it over to the Black Sea, specifically Russia, would be my guess. Just because their offers out of the Black Sea are so cheap compared to the U.S. But at the same time, you got the Chinese the Chinese government that is taking advantage of these low corn prices and low sorghum prices to stockpile. So that's not really a market-driven decision. That's a political decision. And so the Chinese government likes to stockpile when commodities are lower. And that's what they're doing right now. But, of course, they can change their decision anytime. They can cancel those purchases just like they cancel the wheat. So, yep. Yeah, I'm a little reluctant to put too much hope and faith in the Chinese government and their political decisions on buying commodities. And once they change their mind, we're going to cancel it.
That's right. Yeah, they're actively doing some stuff. You know, they're always going to look at every place else before the United States first. Anyway, I mean, that's just what they're going to do. And then if they come to us, that's kind of I won't use the word last resort, but it's a last resort in their mind. Yeah. I think.
Well, they're trying to build their relationships elsewhere.
For sure.
For all the geopolitical reasons we all know about.
Right. Yep. Probably last thing I'd ask you here is, as we're looking at the world right now and the geopolitical stuff that we see happening, I guess any more influence right now geopolitically on the markets than you've seen, than what we've seen in the past, has it been kind of status quo?
An election year. Obviously.
Yeah, that's true.
So a lot of focus on and Biden, who are the current candidates, leading candidates. Yep. There's that may change. He's really old, or they're both. What are we talking about?
No.
So that raises the risk of one of them leaving the race for health reasons.
Right.
And then you've got Biden or Trump with his legal issues. So who knows? You never know. So they could be replaced. But as it is right now, there is that risk of what could happen in an election time. We have the history of both presidents. We know how they both conduct themselves in regards to trade. Neither one of them are friends of trade. The only difference between Biden and Trump is that Trump was more aggressive on his trade protectionism and picking fights with trading partners. And so with that memory, if we have a Trump election this November, well, the markets could respond to that. Because to that fear of a renewed trade fights, trade wars. So there's that here in the U.S. I'd say that's probably the big one, the most likely one at this point in time. The Chinese are always kind of out there on the fringe of what's going to happen with the United States and China, or if China were to invade Taiwan. Everybody always wants to know that. That's a crapshoot.
Right.
No, we already talked about that. If they did something like that, the funds would, like we talked about earlier, would exit their positions in grains and go to cash for safety. And that would cause a rally. But, I think those are the main things that are up in front of us that are certainties. There will be an election here in the United States.
Sure.
And a trade protectionist is going to be in the White House. The question is, how severe is the trade protectionism?
Right.
That's the question.
Yeah.
And I think the markets are going to be following that.
Yep, for sure. All right, man. Probably a good place to stop there, Tanner. If folks want to reach out to you and, get more information about what you're doing, what's the best way to do that?
They can always go to our website, CoBank. They've got all of our information there on the website. And then there's always all of our reports that we produce are on the website as well.
Tanner, appreciate you being on, man. And we'll catch you again next time.
Sounds good. Thanks, Casey.
Right on. I'm Casey Seymour with Moving Iron Podcast. Check me out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. Go to LinkedIn at Moving Iron Podcast and check out the video version of this over on the YouTube channel, which is the Moving Iron Podcast YouTube channel. You can also go to that same handle on TikTok and Snapchat. You can go there too. Sound like to me, TikTok's about ready to get axed from the United States anyway. So check it out while you can. Check it out while you can. So go to movingironllc.com for everything Moving Iron related, and check out the Moving Iron Summit coming up here in Nashville in November 4th through the 6th. So check that out. Information will be up there very soon for that. So with that, I'm Casey Seymour with Tanner Amke. Smooth smart folks. Out. The Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by these great sponsors. Are you looking to value your equipment more accurately, target the right buyers and close more deals, reach your ideal customer? Then look no further. Fusible isn't just about ag data. It's about action. Our best-in-class solution empowers you to value your equipment accurately, make informed decisions, and find the perfect prospects. Ignite your dealership's growth at fusible.com/movingiron-podcast. Out in the field, every decision counts. You wouldn't plant without testing your soil, so why would you prospect blind? Introducing EDA, your one-stop shop for ag equipment intel. EDA goes beyond specs and prices. You get deep dive data on every piece of equipment, like UCC filings that help track ownership changes and uncover potential sales leads. D&B firmographics, which help you understand the financial health and buying power of potential customers. Market trends that help you stay ahead of the curve, and insights on equipment demands and pricings. With EDA, you're not just looking at data, you're seeing opportunity. You find the right buyer, sell smarter, and build lasting relationships. Visit edadata.com for your free demo and unlock the power of knowledge. For over 80 years, Iron Solutions has been your go-to data source for ag dealers, lenders, and manufacturers. Get powerful appraisal and value forecasting tools that fuel profitable decisions anytime, anywhere. Get your free demo at ironsolutions.com. Iron Solutions, confidence in every click. Today, there are many ways to finance ag equipment, but nobody delivers simple, fast, or flexible financing like AgDirect. Learn more about your options to buy, lease, and refinance equipment at agdirect.com. Valley Transportation has been hauling ag and construction equipment across the country for the past 33 years. Call Parker at 800-657-4910 for all your trucking needs. At Valley Transportation, our goal is to help you reach yours. This podcast is proudly provided by Axon, helping dealers move more iron for the past 100 years. Find out more at axontire.com. Move more iron with Axon.
In the 21st century, hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving higher time and time again. Through the years you'll find us here. Moving higher.